Good afternoon, brothers and sisters. How are you all today? Okay. So, it's Sunday already. Another week has passed. Let's see. Is there any of you on my left who is new here today for the first time? Yes, this gentleman here. Tell us your name and how you got to know about this group.
Hi everyone, I'm Yok Ming. I got to know about this group through some sharing from friends. I have friends that attended. So that's why I'm here to listen to you.
I see. Welcome, welcome.
Thank you.
And I suppose your friend is not here today.
No.
Yeah. In the past, maybe about 3-4 years since when we were in the monastery, oftentimes friends or colleagues or even family members sometimes they will introduce to each other, but quite a few times the participants come but the friend didn't come, yeah. But many times they come together also. Yeah. Welcome, welcome. Good to have you here. The rest on my left are all season parking. Yes. How about on my right? Billing, are you new? No, not new anymore. But not old also. Sean using doing video shouldn't be new. Then Cheryl, not new. Jean, not new. Helen, not new. Hey, what's your name? Marcel, yes.
Marcel.
Marcel. Yes, Marcel. Marcel. Then we have BN. We have KS. KS, welcome back.
Wow. My name is KS.
Yes. Tell us how you got to know about this group.
I know this group about 1.5 years ago.
I see. You mean you came for SGC to Jangga Kapa?
I was trying to help, then later I guess.
Oh, I thought it was because you attended Sifu's, don't know which Sifu lah, some Sifu's Heart Sutra, then found it so amazing and so touched.
Not
Heart Sutra. Then which class? Cannot remember. Confirm Heart Sutra lah. Then when you remember, you tell us, okay. Which class? Pusen Sidayan. Pusen Singyan Ping. Oh, I see. Yeah. Yeah. But he's an old guard, old guard. Recently went on reservist. Different kind of reservist. Let me see, who else is new here today? I think the rest have been here before, introduced before. Yes. Good to see you, Marco. How are you?
Great.
How have you been?
Great, I guess.
Are you still studying?
I have just graduated.
Just graduated?
Yeah.
Congrats.
Thank you.
And so what are you doing now?
Working?
Yeah. What are you doing?
Finance, I guess. Asset management, yeah.
Asset management, okay. Yeah. Well, good. Well, your company treating you well?
Of course.
That's nice to hear.
It's all about perception.
This statement is very powerful. Indeed, it's oftentimes really about our perception. When a person perceive the workplace in a certain way, Even if it's a very nice place to work in, the person can feel miserable. But if the person can transcend their own perception, even if the workplace is a bit rough, they are able to go there and fulfill their and discharge their duties as well. Yes.
It's all in the mind.
Ah, yes. Which then brings us to today's topic. San jie wu an, yu ru huo zai. Yeah. So this is today's topic. Let me just bring this up. So, let me see. SGC, where are you? Should I open a new one? I think I opened a new one. So, what is today's date? 23rd of September, year 2018. Yeah. You know, when I was a kid, there was this movie called Space 1999. Yeah. That TV series was, I think, in the 70s. Yeah. So, it has a space moon. Moon is in the space. It has a space station in moon, on the moon. Yeah. The spaceship is called Eagle or something. Eagle 1, Eagle 2. So when I watched that movie, that TV series, I was so excited. You know, as each year passed, I was like, now it's 1979. Wow. Then 1980. I was looking forward to it, you know. By the time it was 1995, I was like, looks like it's not going to happen. In a way, I'm very naive. What I see in the TV, I really believe that is going to happen. Come 1999, we are nowhere near having a moon base. Now it's already almost 19 years since 1999. Yeah, we are still nowhere near. Yeah. So every year, when it's a new year, 2015, 16, 17, 18, I always think about the 1999. Never happened. So, this verse. San jie wu an. Yu ru huo zai. I think the yu is... is it like that?
It's the one with the animal.
Huh? With the what? Like that?
Yeah.
Hang on. Yeah, it's part of a... It's part of a longer verse. Yu ru huo zai. The zai. My handwriting is really going from bad to worse. My calligraphy teacher, Gen Yuan Fa Si, will be so ashamed or disappointed with me. Okay, 比较像样一点. So this is actually from Fa Hua Ping, Fa Hua Jing, Bi Yu Ping. This is from the Lotus Sutra. So let me just briefly explain this, because there's another set of verse after this. So we have this San jie wu an, yu ru huo zai, and then Zhong ku chong man, shen ke bu wei. 常有生死、生老病死、忧患，如是等火炽然不息。 So, let's just start off with this. So today's sharing is from this Lotus Sutra. In this sutra, the Buddha used many parables. Yeah. So there's this sub-chapter, this whole section on parables, various parables given. And this is one of the parables. The parable describes 三界. Do you know what is 三界? So, I think last week, that's the reason why we have this topic this week. Because last week, we went through the Diamond Sutra, and then I sort of, there was something that we discussed and we touched on the different realms. So, what is 三界? So, we typically have 欲界. So this is the central desire realm. This is the form. This is the formless. Strictly speaking, it's actually not realms, but world. Yeah, because the Pali Sanskrit term is Kama Loka, then Rupa Loka, and then Arupa Loka. The word Loka means it's actually world. Yeah, yeah. So another way to understand the word Loka is a boundary. Yeah, a boundary. Yeah, so which is the meaning of 界. So 欲界 or 欲世界, but the term here is about how there are certain different states of existence, and these three categories define certain boundaries. Yeah. In a way, you can say that there are physical boundaries, but in a way, it's not physical boundaries. It's more about the boundaries of our mental preoccupation, mental inclination. For example, we can say that the Buddhist library has a boundary. Yeah. I mean, there is a boundary. But those who are inside the library are not bounded by this physical boundary. Those who are outside are also not bounded by this physical boundary. Anytime people can come in, anytime people can go out. But people choose to come in because they connect with the boundaries of what this place is about. Yeah, that when you come in here, you don't have karaoke. You come in here, you don't have seafood. You don't have hot music. You don't have alcohol. You don't have all the things that some people enjoy. So those people who seek all those things, stimulation of the senses, then they won't enter into this boundary. Yeah, they will go into other boundaries. Likewise, those boundaries, are they prohibited for us? No, you can cross over and go to those boundaries also. In fact, Geylang is like the six realms, you know. Yeah, you can find almost every single realm inside Geylang. Yeah, you have heavenly realm, you have human realm, then you have the animal realm also, a lot of the food stall. And the way it's cooked sometimes is like hell realm. Yeah. Then sometimes you see people, it's really shady lifestyle. Yeah, it's like living in the lower realms. Yeah. So in a way, physically, there can be a demarcation. But the demarcation here is a result of the mental demarcation. Yeah, it's not that it is a physical demarcation and if you happen to enter, then you become like that. It is that because you are like that, then you enter into this demarcation. Similarly, BL has a physical boundary, but it's not that you come in, then you will want to learn Dhamma. It's that because you want to learn Dhamma, then you come in here. It's because you want seafood, then you go into a seafood restaurant. It's not that you walk halfway, then someone shove you, then you go inside, oh, can I have some seafood? No. Yeah, it's not that someone just walk past, and then very crowded, then get pushed into the library, then Namo Tassa, yeah? The person actually not even a Buddhist, yeah, free thinker, then just go in, Namo Tassa Bante, huh? No, it's not like that. Yeah. Similarly, we get reborn in this realm, into this realm, into this realm. Don't mind my drawing, they don't overlap, okay? let me redraw them. Maybe I shouldn't draw a circle. I hesitate to draw a table, but I'm going to draw a table anyway. Yeah. Yeah. So it's not that you go into this realm, heng heng sui sui, then suddenly you have jhana. Yeah. Yeah. So form world, characteristics of those in the form will, they have the jhana meditative concentration. Yeah. Formless, they have the formless concentration. Sensual desire realm or sensual desire will, what do they have? They also have a special power. They crave for sensual desire. So when we understand this way, then it's not that, oh, I'm born as a human being, so that's why I act in a human way. It's that you act in a human way, that's why you are born as a human being. That you act in a humane way, yeah, in a kind way. But not kind enough to be reborn in the upper level, yeah. You still have sensual desire, so we are still stuck here. Simple? So that's why in Buddhism there's this saying, among your peers, we don't have to, like, in a way, criticize each other. Sama-sama, all stuck here. It's a matter of degree. Yeah. So, because we come in here, because of past inclination, it doesn't mean that we must continue with that inclination. So in Buddhism, this is the teaching of change, of transcendence, a teaching of, in a way we can say, improvement. Yeah, where we are now is determined by how we were in the past, not just past life, but also immediate past. But where we will be, that is not certain yet. That's not certain. When it's not certain, sometimes it can cause us to be a bit uneasy. How so? Like now we are human being. If next life we are not certain to be human, yeah. This morning, one student was like, "So, Sufu, then next life, how? How do we make sure that we don't, you know, go down? Yeah, how? If we were to cultivate enough of the wholesomeness, then we connect with the wholesomeness. And with this wholesomeness, then we go towards the wholesome realm. Yeah. So it's actually very empowering. Yeah. We are in control of our vehicle, yeah, our path. And the Buddha gave us a Google map, a spiritual Google map, to tell us exactly this is the path that next exit 1A to formless world. If you want, you go by exit 1. Yeah. Or maybe we can start from the lower one. Exit 1A to hell. Very easy. Yeah. 1A to hell, 2A also to hell. A lot of exit to hell. Be careful, don't exit that way. Yeah. Then, okay, 1B to this other realm. 1C to this other realm. Yeah. The Buddha map out all the different worlds. with all the different destinations so that we know clearly how to avoid those that is painful if you don't want to go to painful realms. Is there anyone who are interested to go to painful realms? Anyone? Avicii? Anyone? Avicii Hell? Anyone? No? The Buddha actually tells us exactly how to go to every single realm. Not that he wants us to go to hell, but he tells us so that we know what to avoid. We know what to avoid. So, here we talk about the three different worlds. What about the six realms? So, I'm going to draw a mapping here so that you can have an idea of how they are mapped against each other. So, the mapping is like this. Let me see whether there's a line. I can draw lines this way. So it's neater, huh? Okay. So draw up to here. Can I draw dotted line? Bow dotted line. Okay, never mind. So zoom in. So over here, this is the heavenly realm. Handwriting is still uglier. So heavenly, then we have human, sometimes Asura is drawn or written next to human because the Asura realm actually spans close to the heavenly realm, and then the lowest can be lower than human also. Then we have ghosts, and then we have the animal. Yeah. Asura, some of them are like gigantic animal in some ways. Then we have hell, which is very clear below. Okay? So we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 realms. These are the six realms you are familiar with. Then if you were to compare with the three worlds, then you find that this is where there's a bit of a difference. So let me redraw here, give it a bit more space. I think this is neater, then you all don't get so much headache. Okay. So I hope this becomes clearer. So sensual desire realm actually spans this whole area. So part of the sensual desire realm is under heaven. Yeah? I can understand? Then the rest would contain the human, Asura, ghost, animal, and hell. Then if you look at heavenly realm, in Buddhism, what the Buddha observed is, besides the sensual desire heavenly realm, then there is the four different levels, 1, 2, 3, 4, jhana, and 1, 2, 3, 4 of the formless realm. So these are what we call the six realms and the three worlds. If you look at the Pali Canon, then the Buddha often highlight five destinations. What are the five destinations? The five destinations are one, two, three, four, five. Yeah. In the Pali Canon, Asura is not a separate realm. Yeah? Because it depends on whether it's closer to heavenly or animal, then it's subsumed under heavenly or animal realm. Okay? Mm. Any questions? Yes? Yes. Yeah. So are they good or no good? Confused, Actually, do you know what is ghost?
Ghost is ghost.
Ghost is ghost. Is the Asuras seen or not seen? So Asuras, rightly speaking, can be seen. But these days, very few people see. Yeah, especially after mobile handphones with camera, nobody see. When I was in secondary school, I had this question mark. Why is it that in the past, people seem to see so much of the heavenly beings, but in modern times, fewer and fewer people see, if at all? So Asura is supposed to be physical, and depending on their merits, they may be closer to the lower of the heavenly realm, or they may be closer to the animal realm. Your question actually has there's another question that is related to your question, which is, are these six realms or five, are they so clearly demarcated? Is there a point where you travel, and then you see a signboard, 500 kilometers to Asura realm? Now exiting human realm. Is there such a signboard out there? When you go towards hell, is there a signboard there saying 500 kilometers to hell, now exiting human realm? Is there such a clear demarcation? To be very honest, when I first learned about the different realms, it was taught to me, and I learned it as very clear: human is human, heavenly is heavenly, very distinct, separate realms. But over the years, as I learned more sutras, and also learned more from the commentaries, then I realized that, like many other things that the Buddha teach, the purpose is more important, oftentimes, not all the time, but oftentimes, the purpose why the Buddha teach this is more important than the exact detail of how he teach it. What does it mean? Take for example, when the Buddha talk about the physical body, he didn't go into too much detail. And the reason is, why did he teach it? He teach it to help us have a more balanced view of the body. He didn't teach it for us to become a doctor. So as a result, he didn't go through much details. Similarly, when he go through, he teach us about the different world, his aim was not for us to become a cosmologist or physicist, astrophysicist, to map out the world system, to know exactly of the different realms of heaven, exactly which part of the world it is. He didn't come out with a star map, He didn't do any of that. He just relate to what people already know. But the purpose of him going into all this, oftentimes, circles around a few themes. A few themes. What are those themes? Dharma themes. I'm going to go into Dharma themes in a while, but I want to wrap up your question about Asura. Okay? So, what I gather from all the different teachings is, if we look at Asura or ghosts alone. There are a lot of different types of Asura. There are also a lot of different types of ghosts. In 大智度论, yeah, the commentary to the Mahaprajna Paramita Sutra, that means the commentary to the Perfection of Wisdom Sutra, it says that this particular realm is called hungry ghost, not because all the ghosts are hungry, but because the most intense suffering for this particular category is the hungry ghost. So it is named after the most intense type to highlight the suffering they are facing. Not that all the ghosts suffer so much also. Yeah. But if you don't highlight the suffering, then people think, also not so bad. I can, because you know in the sutra it talk about 大力鬼神. So 大力鬼神 means that they are reborn as ghosts, but they have merits. Well. So they live quite okay one. Yeah. But the purpose of the Buddha going through the realms, teaching about the different realms, was not to map up a chart. Yeah. It was to highlight that in all these different realms, there are pros and cons to them. The three lower realms, let me mark it out in, black. So, three lower realms. These three lower realms are main feature of them is suffering. So, does it mean that they are constantly suffering? No. In Singapore, a lot of animals live quite well. The cats and dogs have manicure. Yeah, they have a pet hotel. Yeah, my students from SBF. Once a year, some of them have graduated for 10 over years, some 8 years, some 10 years. Once a year, we will meet up for Chinese New Year gathering, whole one or two batches meet together at one of the students' house. Their house is 3-story in Siglap. So, they have a cage for the cat. The owner stay in a 3-story house. The cat also stay in a 3-story house. Yeah, the cage is 3-story one. Oh, then there's conduit, there's a wheel inside. Got here, you know, can run around. Yeah, home. Yeah, if the cat is born in some other countries, it will be making people home. Yeah, cats and dogs in Southeast Asia are sometimes taken as food. So no joke. But just because there are some cats and dogs that live quite well, doesn't mean that animal in general is happy. Well. Yeah. But it doesn't mean that there are no animals that live well. Yeah. But the Buddha wanted to highlight key feature for animal realm is delusion. So no matter whether they have good life or bad life, their state is in a deluded state. I mean, not that they don't have other defilements. It doesn't mean that all cats and dogs are deluded. Then no other defilements. It doesn't mean that they cannot show compassion also. Now on YouTube, you can see a lot of videos. Sometimes the animal have more compassion than human beings. Yeah, cats and dogs, the geese, go and feed the bird, feed the fish. Yeah, the bird have his own feet, right? Then the bird, the geese eat, then yeah, better than some human. Some human have no compassion for fellow human beings, but the geese have compassion for other species. Yeah, so when we look at I'm sharing with you my own. So my point is that my own appreciation of the realms in a way become richer over the years. That is no longer like a strict demarcation, you know, all this is human, all this is what. Because you look at some human, they live like beings from other realms. Yeah. So, but for heavenly beings, then most of us cannot see. Yeah. But of all this, what is the Dharma theme that the Buddha was trying to bring out to us? Yeah. I'm going to refer to some sources on the very subtle details. So let me just this. So this is where we go into the specifics of in each realm, what is the lifespan? This part, I admit to you, I tell you very frankly, I don't go and memorize. So I must refer to the mapping. Yeah. So so in this particular set, in the Theravadan tradition, I'm basing it on the Theravadan lineage here, the text, or rather from the Pali Canon, 31 planes of existence. So we have the first category, Niraya. In Chinese is Nai Luo Jia, basically hell. Some translation translate as purgatory. One thing though, we usually use the word hell in Chinese, 地狱. Do you know where is 地狱? So when we were doing translation, we touched on this word also. So when I look at the word, then I realize, hey, it's quite interesting. 地狱, literally, the prison in earth. Yeah, earth prison. Yeah, or in a way, dungeon. Yeah, I mean the word literally means that. 地狱 means a prison that's under the earth, you know. Yeah, so hell, there are different categories. A lot of people think that, oh, all this description is inside the 地藏经. Yeah, it is inside 地藏经, the Earth Store Bodhisattva Vow Sutra. But descriptions of hell can be seen throughout the Pali Canon as well. So the question is, how long is the duration? Let's take a look. Are you all eager to know? You all want to know? How long? It says, varies. Yeah. The shortest that I know is what we call Qiu Pai Di. Yeah, bouncing ball hell. So don't be mistaken, okay? It's not that you go there and play bouncing ball. But it is described. Where did it appear? In one of the texts that describe the Buddha's past life, when he was a merchant, and he saw with his abilities that there was a person who had evil intent. So wanting to steal everything, that person was planning to kill everybody. Wanted to kill everybody. So out of compassion, he wanted to save him and save everybody. From the consequences, he saw that there's no other way around it except to kill that person. So, but if you kill this person, he has to go somewhere. Well, in this case, to go to hell. But after all the consideration, he realized that if he don't do it, he will kill everybody and he will go to hell even longer. And the rest being killed will be filled with anger and hatred, will go to lower realms also. So he, with that in consideration, he willingly go to hell. So in Buddhism, we don't justify an action through our intention. He killed him, and later when he died, he did go to hell. But the text then, the commentary or the text, then highlight that when he go to hell, which hell did he go to? This bouncing ball hell. Why bouncing ball? It is that because when he committed the killing, the thought of harmfulness is so minute. It's just sufficient to kill. But the rest of the intent supporting the killing was out of compassion for the rest of the people and even for the person he's killing. Such that even though he go to hell, it was for the duration of a bouncing ball. Yeah. The duration that it takes for the ball to bounce, that's how long he was in hell. So there are some people, when they hear about this sutta, they only hear the front part, then they think, wow, we can justify violence, you know. Never mind, we kill, then, you know, it's okay. But you must ask yourself, you know, are you able to maintain that fine line? Only sufficient. And still, you know the saying, Einstein, I think, once said, if you put your hand on the burning stove for 1 minute, it feels like eternity. Yeah, but if you spend, or rather it feels like an hour or eternity. Yeah? But if you spend an hour with a girl that you like, it feels like only 1 minute. Yeah. So even if you are in hell for that bouncing ball period, yeah, maybe 1 second, the suffering can be very intense, so it's no joke. Yeah. So we look at hell, that's the shortest. The Shupai, so far that I've read or heard, shortest duration. But there are others that's very long. Yeah, in fact, most of the other hells are extremely long. Okay, one of the highlight, it's like when you go to go on a tour, right? You go to other countries, then they'll show you the highlight of this country. So likewise, when we look at hell, I must show you the highlight. So the highlight is, if you commit the 5 heinous deeds, yeah, then you get to one of the most severe hell ever. It's called Avicii Hell. Avicii. So Avicii itself, what does it mean? It means uninterrupted. Uninterrupted. 无间. You know, there's a Hong Kong cop and robber story, right? Called 无间道. They borrow this term from Buddhism also. Yeah, 无间道 in Buddhist text sutra actually refers to doing these 5 heinous deeds. Yeah, that is so heinous. The consequence is, in this life, you will never attain enlightenment because your heavy karma obstructs you. So you can continue learning. You should continue learning, but you must know that you cannot progress anymore in this life until this karma is used out. Otherwise, this karma will just be there stopping you. So after this life, what happened? After this life, we born in Avicii hell. And Avicii hell is called 无间 also because the suffering in this hell is uninterrupted. Uninterrupted. In all the hells, it's quite constant, but there's always a duration. Yeah, in between the sessions. Yeah. Like it described, at the start of a certain cycle, then the fire will burn, then this had happened, that will happen. Then after that, the hell beings is totally like, in a way, perish. Then everything will cool down. Then the wind blow, then the being arise again. So in between, there's that period, that gap. At least there's a break. Sometimes they describe the hell being, in this Hanbing Di, freezing hell. Buddhist hell is not always like other cultures are always burning. Some hell descriptions is of extreme cold. Some hell description is isolation. Yeah, that the being in hell don't encounter anybody. Yeah, and filled with a lot of fear, you know, of being alone. yeah, but just stuck in that state. Yeah, so it described like the freezing hell, the cold wind will blow and freeze until it's so cold, then that the person just shatter. Then in the start of the next day, the wind blow again, and then he reappear, re-manifest. Yeah. And then continue to be frozen. Yeah. So even then, there's that period where when the being just arise, just appear, and, you know, starting to freeze, but not frozen yet. Yeah. But for Avicii, all the way. Yeah, all the way until the end of that karma. Hence Avicii. That's the highlight. So any other highlight you want to know about? Better don't know. Yeah. Or rather, better don't go there. So, what about the other realms? Okay. Oh, I didn't say. So, killing of one's father, mother, killing of an arahant, harming of a Buddha, breaking up of a community that is in harmony. That means a monastic community. They are learning and practicing in harmony. And then someone now come in to teach them a distorted teaching, causing them to have differing views. And as a result, they split up. So, if we look at the five deeds, the first two, father and mother, have much gratitude towards us, or rather we towards them. We have much gratitude towards them. We are indebted to our parents. So to harm them physically to the point of death, well, that's very severe. My heart really cry for those when I see news in US. In Singapore, we don't see this much, if at all. But in US, it's not uncommon, you know, to see that, oh, in Louisiana, in Florida, in whatever states, the child, and it's not like adult, sometimes it's the teenager, just take the gun at home, take the shotgun, shoot the parents. Yeah. There was one particular case I remember. When the police arrived, the son was still sitting in the living room watching TV, you know. Yeah. The mother in the kitchen kena blown to bits. And he was just watching TV. It's a crazy thing. But I've been sharing with students. It's easy for us to think that, oh, American society is so decadent, you know. Yeah, the morals is down in the shambles. But I think, in part, it is because they have very easy access, number one, to weapon. Yeah, like today in Singapore, you really have to try really hard to get a gun. I mean, I don't know how. Don't ask me, okay? Yeah. I don't want to know how also. But in US, when I first went to US in 2000 for a company trip, then we went to Walmart, and I thought I went into the wrong place, you know. Last time in Walmart, they have the guns, you know. Yeah, and it was the M16, you know. Yeah, but not the they changed the boat carrier. So that is semi-automatic, not full automatic, yeah. But still, I was like, "Wow, really? Yeah, you can easily get a gun. Yeah, you just pay, you register your name, you show your some form of ID. Yeah, because in the US they don't have what, like Singapore and Malaysia, we have IC, right? Yeah, in the US they don't have. Yeah, they usually show their driving license. Or it can be any kind of identification. Yeah. And people can come up with fake identification. Yeah. So my point is that those conditions, if a person were to then kill the parents. Yeah, so the first two parents being some two individuals in this world who have done much for us, if you are to harm them, it requires us to have to give rise to such perverse mentality, yeah. And it is this perversion that brings us to hell, yeah. That we must have so much evilness in us to do something like that. The third and the fourth. The third and the fourth, the third one, arahant, you can still kill an arahant. It's still possible. In the Buddha's time, there were some arahants who were killed. Usually, in the text, the Buddha would relate how that arahant, in a past life, had some karmic fruit that is ripening already. But I must know that even if that person's karma is ripening, doesn't mean you must go and participate, you know. If let's say now, let's say Zhoping. Always use Zhoping. Anybody want to volunteer? Let's say Zhoping. Let's say Zhoping. Now he has karma to be slapped. So what happened? The way I understand it now is, when his karma is ripening to be slapped, then everybody who, most people who see him will feel like slapping him. No? Yeah. It's nothing magical. It's that when the karma is ripening already, he will somehow do stupid things to provoke people to want to slap him. Not that he consciously think, I should be slapped because my karma is ripening. But it comes as an impulse. He can't help it also. And most people who are not cultivators would be induced to want to slap him also. See you all out. Yeah. Yeah. But it doesn't mean that you must slap, you know. It just means that there is that impulse. And therein lies the opportunity to change. To change, to transcend our karma. What if nobody slapped him? What if all of us, we are in a retreat, so although he has karma to be slapped, but none of us slapped him more? Maybe he walked into the wall. Or maybe because of that, the karma didn't have a chance to ripen, but it's still there. And wait until he finishes his retreat, he go out, immediately go and quarrel with someone, piak! something like that. But you must know that whether in a retreat someone slapped him or outside, the person who slapped, although it's part of the condition resulting in for the ripening, right? It doesn't mean that the person, hey, I'm helping him to clear his karma, nothing wrong. No, the person who slapped is acting on the impulse. And so plant the new seed to be slapped in future. something like that. The exact consequence still vary. Depend on the kind of mental defilements that is arising when the person decides to slap. Depends on the intent. Depends on a lot of things. So it's not so simple as I slap you, then next time you slap me. Then since you slap me, then next time I must slap you again. Then no end. So in Buddhism, we don't say that karma this way. Yeah, it's just the potential. Just now talking about the five. So when an arahant is killed, for the arahant, as long as in the past there were some fruits, karmic consequence, karmic actions, is ripening, the arahant will have to face it also. The difference is that the arahant will face it with equanimity. Yeah. without further planting new seeds. Without further planting new seeds. But if a person were to then complete that karma by killing, the person still commits very heavy karma. Why? Because without the person participating, the karma cannot ripen. Just now I mentioned, maybe his karma ripening, but as long as we don't slap him, his karma never ripen. What? He just sit down there, meditate, nothing happened. What? That's why, you know, sometimes in some accounts I've heard, some of the masters, they can tell. Then they just tell the student, if you stay here and for this 1 month or 3 months, you'll be fine. But when the person's karma is ripening, just cannot, 3 months, no big deal. But somehow the person feel like, no, I must go out. And go out immediately, pop, kena. Yeah, so it's the karma ripening. In the case of killing an arahant, the arahant, maybe the karma is ripening, but if the person were to go and participate, oh, very heavy. Because if you don't kill the arahant, or don't go and participate in that, the fruit, if it should ripen by itself, then the person, arahant, may just die without anybody being involved. I mean, people sometimes die in their sleep. But why must you be the one to go and kill? No, Sifu, I must help, ma. Some things don't have to help one, you know. Yeah. Why is it killing an arahant so heavy a karma? Because if the arahant even just stay for one more day alive, if the arahant were to just go out on arms round, whoever were to even offer one mouth, one morsel, morsel that means one, like one mouth of food, the wholesome merit is so great, you know. Yeah. And if the arahant in this process encounter some individuals, the arahant can inspire or directly teach, yeah, those whom the arahant encounter. Yeah, so a lot of good things can happen from the arahant just being alive for one more day. The Buddha himself, encouraged his disciples not to enter parinibbana immediately after attaining an enlightenment, but encourage them out of compassion for sentient beings to stay on for their welfare. Don't just attain enlightenment and just enter parinibbana. Why? So even for the Shravaka disciples to the arahants, you can see the traces of Bodhisattva path inside the Pali Canon already. Why stay on? Stay on, then you can benefit more people, not just for ourselves. Since you already complete your task, then you know, no harm for you. Stay on, you can benefit more people. So if you kill such a person, hiya, much harm. Of course, our Buddha cannot be harmed because the Buddha has purified his sight. Yeah, as far as this kind of heavy karma is concerned, already all done with. So for the Buddha himself, he was harmed but not killed by his own cousin, Venerable Devadatta. Yeah, tried to kill him with a boulder, a splinter came off, cut his toe. Yeah, 2-4 asenshye. Yeah, so just causing the Buddha to bleed or tom. But don't be mistaken, okay? It's not that Buddha, whoa, pain, you go to hell. Yeah. So from this, there's something to learn also, you know. Karma is not simply about, oh, how angry is that person? If that person is very angry, well, you go to hell even more. The person not angry, then you don't go to hell. No. Yeah, it's not about how angry that person is. Yeah, but how wrong your deed is. Yeah. From arahant and Buddha, we can see this. When an arahant is killed, the arahant don't get angry with you, no? Yeah. In fact, some of them even after that, made utterance, you know, continue on to go and talk to the Buddha, then after that take leave, then pass away. Yeah. The Arahant, no anger. Aiya, you chum, you chum. Yeah. I think the Arahant is more concerned about the person who is going to kill them than about themselves. Yeah. But the consequence is very great. Yeah. Then the last one, because if the Sangha is in harmony, and important thing, and they are in the right path, learning the Dharma, and then you go and cause them to split up, then it's not just one person. We ourselves have wrong view. We cause them to have wrong views. So it's worse than killing a person. Yeah, because it's killing off their right view. Killing off their spiritual life. With wrong view, then they deviate from the path. They cannot be liberated. And that is for many lives. I don't know how many lives are. That's why the fifth one is part of the five heinous states. Okay, enough about hell. We must go to other realms. Otherwise, stay in hell for too long. Not so good. Asura realm is also indeterminate. Yeah, varies. Because depending on whether it's part of the animal realm or heavenly realm, it can vary. Okay? In fact, over here, the categorization, animal also vary. The lifespan, hungry ghosts also vary. The one that has more clarity is, so human realm, over here it says, approximately from 10 to 120 years. This during this period. Yeah? During this period. In future, the duration can increase, it can decrease also. Yeah. Then we go to the heavenly realm. So heavenly realm, we have a lot of figures here. The lowest of the heavenly realm, we have the Devas, the four great kings. We have the four great kings. How long is the lifespan there? 9 million years. Yeah, 9 million years. So that is the lowest. In this realm, I believe the lifespan, the day, that means the timing over there is different from this place also. Not talking about time zone, but talking about the rate of time, rate of change. So it is said that in the lowest, which is this realm, this heavenly realm, one day, one night is equal to 50 human years. Yeah, 50 human years. Yeah, so over here, 9 million. Above this is the heaven of the 33 gods. The retinue of the 33 gods. So this one is 36 million. Do you know how much is 36 million? A lot, lah. Then, let me erase this first. And then we have Yama, Ye Mo Tian, the Yama gods, Yama Deva, 144 million years. I just put MY lah. So you basically times 4 each time you go up. Yeah, multiply by 4. Yeah, 9 million multiply by 4, 36. 36 multiply by 4, 144. Yeah. So this is the extent of the lifespan up to this point. Then above that, there is the Tushita heaven. You know Tushita heaven? Have you been there before? Yeah. Tushita heaven, 576 million years. Then we have the Nimanarati Deva. Another name for it is the what we call Tahua Zizai Tian. Yeah, Tahua Zizai Tian. Oh, Hua Le Tian, sorry, Hua Le Tian. So this is the Hua Le Tian. Let me write it down. Nimanarati. So this is 2.3 billion years. By now, it doesn't make any difference to us anyway. Yeah, to us, once we see 9 million, how long is 9 million? Human history is not even a few hundred thousand. Yeah, Indian and Chinese history, 不分上下, 5,000, 6,000 years history. Yeah, this is what? Minimally 9 million years. That's more. Then there is the Tahua Zizai Tian. Para Nimitta Vasavati. Para Nimitta Vasavati. Wati. This is 9.2 billion years. Does it even make any sense by now? Now all this is actually part of this section. Okay? Okay? So don't be mistaken that this is under jhana. This is all the sensual desire realm. Sensual desire heaven. So how do we go to these realms? Yeah. So these various realms are described in the sutta. Anybody who want to sign up, you observe the 8 precepts. Yeah, just 8 precepts. You make a vow. With this merit, I want to be reborn in this realm, in that realm. You can go there. In one of the sutta, the Buddha highlighted. He who so desire, upon observing the 8 precepts, with that aspiration to be reborn in the heaven of the 4 great kings, upon death, will be reborn there. And having transpired from that realm, will be reborn in human realm, and when born as a human, will enjoy great wealth, long lifespan, and so on. And after that, can still be reborn again, multiple times. Not finished yet, I think I draw on this side. So, over here, we have the Brahma Loka. So for the Brahma Loka, there is a few sections here. Let me see. All together, so there's the Brahma. How long is the lifespan? One third of an aeon. Aeon or there are two spelling, and both are the same thing, more or less the same thing. How long is an aeon? I've shared many times before, the guy 100 years go and wipe, yeah, after the whole thing is used up, one aeon is not worn out yet. Basically a long, long time. You can imagine before that is 9.2 billion years. This is maybe about 4 times or 16 times more than that. So reaching trillion years already. Yeah. So the next level is half an aeon. And Mahabrahma, so this one is ministers of Brahma. Then you have, we have retinue of Brahma. Then we have ministers of Brahma. Then we have the Mahabrahma, the great Brahma. And this is one full aeon. So this one full aeon, up to this, this is the first jhana. And then after that, we have the second jhana, another three layers. So the next level, let me just draw a line here. Next three layers. Then we have limited radiance. We have unbounded radiance. And streaming radiance. And their lifespan, again, goes up. Here goes up double. So, 2, 4, 8. 2 aeon, 4 aeon, 8 aeon. And then, okay, run out of space. Come here again. So, this is first. This is second. And then third. Do you all need all the details? I think don't need. It just becomes more and more astronomical. Yeah. So, some students ask, so is it really exactly that number? This is the maximum range. And most of them will live out their whole lifespan. Some of them may live three-quarter, half of that lifespan and so on, depending on individual's karma, merits and so on. But a few features here. In the jhana world, to be reborn in the form world or jhana world, the requirement is that the person must have cultivated jhana. Yeah, the person must have cultivated jhana. If the person can cultivate jhana, meaning that the person actually attained jhana, then towards the end of the life, is able to enter jhana. And entering jhana, the person passed away in that way. The mind is in that state. So the karmic seeds pertaining to the form world will ripen. And then the mental continuum basically seeks rebirth in the form world. Yeah. In that way, a person is reborn in the form world. Now, it compared to the sensual desire realm, yeah. So this is the form world. So in the form world, it doesn't have any of the problems of the sensual desire realm. Yeah. For us in sensual desire realm, sometimes it's a bit difficult to appreciate what is happening up there. Yeah. Because we only know about sensual desire. We only know about what we can see, what we can hear, what we can smell, what we can taste, what we can touch. Yeah. Even our thoughts circle around that. Even our thoughts about the past revolve around sight, sound, smell, taste, touch. Our thoughts about the future, whether desiring something to happen or desiring something not to happen, is still around, mostly around this. Yeah. It's all revolving around all this. Yeah. Of course, we have other attachment. Yeah. On top of our pursuit of the senses, then we still pursue human beings. We still pursue positions. We still pursue so many things. All those other things we pursue, directly or indirectly, give us sensual pleasure. So as a result, for us, when we look at the description of this realm, sometimes it may be a bit abstract and like, why do we want to go there? Yeah, why do we want to go there? But only when you have meditated to a certain point, then you see that sensual desire is disturbing. It's agitative. It causes the mind to become restless. Yeah. And it can give rise to other defilements. Yeah. So until we see this, our effort to practice meditation will be sometimes we want, sometimes we don't want. For form and formless realm over here is also not ideal. Because in the formless realm, again, to be reborn in the formless realm, you need to have attained formless concentration. But once you are in the formless concentration, the mind is too subtle. Yeah, it is not able to give rise to insight. It is so subtle that if we were to maybe use a MRI machine or something, then, machine, is it spoiled? Nothing happening. Yeah, the mind is without any activity, almost without any activity. Yeah, but for insight to occur, there is still some activity. Yeah. So, for one, those in this state, number one, cannot do reflection. Because the mind has to move away from reflection. Then you can go into this. Yeah. Become a very dormant state. Yeah. The mind dormant. Mentally dormant. And of course, in this state, the person has way long before that transcended sensual desire. So this realm is too agitative. This realm is too dormant. So these two are the extremes. Yeah. This realm is actually quite good. It's actually quite ideal. But not easy to attain. And it's not the end also. Yeah. It's not the end also. So in the Buddhist practice, when we practice samatha vipassana, samatha leads to the jhana. Then using the tranquil state of the mind in jhana, use it to give rise to insight. Yeah, give rise to insight. So when the Buddha goes through the different realms, there's what I mentioned about the Dhamma theme. So a few things he highlight is, number one, what is that realm, that state. That means whether it's any of the six realms, what kind of pleasure are there? Yeah, gratifications. And then what kind of pain are there? What kind of shortcomings are there? Now, of course, for the lower realms, then it's very clear that there's pain, there's shortcomings. For the heavenly realm, it's very clear that there's pleasure, there's gratification. But for heavenly realm, not easy to see that they also suffer, that there's shortcoming also. But the Buddha also highlight the shortcoming of the heavenly realm. Just now I mentioned a few. Yeah, in the formless realm, the shortcoming is you cannot attain enlightenment there. Yeah, in the sensual desire heavenly realm, that's too much pleasure. You don't seek liberation. So your effort is very weak. And among all of them, the worst shortcoming is the lifespan, although very long, yeah, at some point it doesn't make sense to write anymore. Yeah, it's still finite. Oh, so
what's the relationship?
Yeah,
after the form and formless, is it all or is it after form then you become the formless?
Yes.
Or you do you have a choice after you reach a jhana state whether you want to meet or...
So when a person reach fourth jhana while cultivating, you have to, if you want, you can go further to cultivate to go into the formless state. Last week, did I cover how to go to the formless state? No. So, should I go into that?
Yes.
Yes.
Another 5-10 minutes.
Okay, let's just do 3 minutes on it. But you know when I say 3 minutes. Jialat. Some of you start to text, I'll be late. So, if you want the full detail, then we have to go from first jhana. The gist of it is that the whole series from first, second to third, fourth jhana is a series of mental training. Yeah, and I think last week I roughly mentioned about how the requirements is that you must be able to master your mind where the object is able to be held at will, yeah, in a steady state. So I think I may have also highlighted that if you really go through a training, you'll find that it is not simply about having a picture in your mind, having an object in your mind, but it's the process of reaching there. That through this process, you are able to direct your mind to whatever state you will it to be. Currently, you think about it, one of the major cause of mental illness is depression. What is depression? In a way, it is basically that if a person gets into a very in a depressed state, but somehow unable to get out of it. Think about it. In school, we learn how to calculate numbers. We learn how to organize words to form sentences, organize sentences to form paragraph, organize paragraphs to form a composition of words, yeah, to write essays, to convey an idea, and so on and so forth. We learn all these things, but we rarely learn how to compose our mind. We rarely learn how to manage different parts of our mind, to steer our mind. We learn to steer our hand, to steer the basketball. We learn to kick the football into the goal. But we rarely learn how to move our mind from here to here. Rarely. We learn how to, you know, combine different colors to form the color we want, to match what we see. But we never learn how to match the different mental states to be able to see clearly, this mental state is unpleasant. It's not what I want. Then to learn how to move our mind to change the color so that it becomes a pure, bright color. We never learn that. But if a person were to practice concentration to the point of jhana, in that process, the person would have learned that. Learn to manage the mind very succinctly. It's not a random thing, I just sit and then I feel good. That is very preliminary. Yeah. If a person even reached jhana, even first jhana, the level of control is quite refined already. But to go to fourth jhana is even more refined. And even at fourth jhana, there are different stages also. So to have complete mastery, then the person, for a start, without even talking about formless world, the person will have mastery over the mind. In one of the book, in the Buddha's words, this description of the training comes under the chapter Mastering the Mind. Yeah, not in the earlier chapters. Earlier chapters just talk about how to relate to other people, father and son, then what husband and wife. I mean, those are important also. Not that it's not important. Yeah, but the training don't just stop at every day how to talk, all those things. So if a person reached the fourth jhana, being able to master the mind this way, then the person is able to say, use the mind to fill up an infinite expanse of the world, yeah, with the object. For us, can you now look at this room and try to capture how big this room is? This room, if you are into real estate, you will probably estimate that this room is around maybe 900 square feet. They're about. I'm just guessing, or maybe 800. Yeah. The reason why I seem to have a gauge, I just anyhow whack. Yeah. And also partly because earlier this year, some students brought me here and there to look at places because we were looking for places. Yeah. So roughly, this size is about 800 to 900. Yeah. If you include the back, that is about 900 plus. Yeah. But we have this idea, not because of the number 800, no. But really because of the physical size. So you think about it, we are talking about a space. The empty space itself, there's no measurement, you know. So you use something that has measurement to enclose something that has no measurement. And now if I were to ask you to close your eyes and say, picture the shrine hall, yeah, the auditorium of Buddhist library. You close your eyes, you probably will have an image of this room depending on where you sit. Like the auditorium that I see is always like that. I seldom see the other side. I seldom see the other side. Whereas for you all usually see this side. And if I were to ask you how the Buddha looked like, you all may not remember because you always see the screen. And if I were to ask you to visualize this room, unwittingly, you may visualize it with all the cushion and the people around you, you know. Yeah. But for the person in fourth jhana, all this can be removed at will. yeah, and using the boundaries of the physical space, the physical object, then he can demarcate an area, a space that is of this size. And so from this point, he expand this physical object, yeah, the object of meditation, to cover an infinite space. Because this will become the basis for the next level, the formless first level, 空无边处定, the base of infinite space. Just now I asked, that was just the first part of the question. Can you visualize this? Now I ask you, can you visualize twice the size of DL? Then you just multiply this, oh, okay, it's like that, then now it's double size. Okay, how about four times? Okay, then we multiply another way. Some of you multiply this way. Yeah. How about 10 times? Oh, wait, Sifu, hang on, I count. 5 times here, 2 times there. How about 23 times? Hey, Sifu, don't like that, ma. 23, how to multiply? You know, we have limitations, no? Now I ask you, can you visualize the whole of Singapore? Then depending on when the last time was that you saw Singapore map. Ah, if the last time you saw was in the 80s, then you will only remember that this part, there's a straight line because of Changi Airport, then this side is what. But now if you look at the actual Singapore map, this side is also a straight line because Bukom, they fill up a lot of places, we have been reclaiming land. But how big is that space? I think it's 400 over kilometers square or something. Yeah. But just Singapore itself is still just a concept, no? How large is that? Have you ever thought about how large? Also don't know. We only know it's not very big. Yeah. Yeah. So if we were to train our mind, then you can really, okay, let's cover infinite. Now I say infinite space, how big is infinite space? Exactly. So the meditator slowly expand and cover to the boundaries of his perception, yeah, in the mind, all the way covering. And then after that, for what purpose? With that physical boundary, then he can have a feel of that space. And at will, important thing, because at this point, he can at will show the object, remove the object. So at this point, then he removed the object. Why remove the object? Because at that level, if he want to train the mind to become even more subtle, then he see that even having the object is agitative. Compared to the sensual desire, it's not agitative. But compared to the higher level, it's agitative. So he removed the object. And in place of the object, now you look at the carpet, yeah. Now you remove the carpet, that space outlined by the carpet, that's how big BL is. But we tend to use the physical things to, you know, demarcate. Yeah. Once removing the object, what is left is the base of infinite space, 空无边处定, first concentration. Second one, 实无边处定. So infinite space, right? So initially from first fourth jhana to the first concentration, formless concentration, enter, bounce out. Because hard to maintain the empty space without the object. So object maybe come in by itself. So he trained himself. Come out with object, remove it. Come out with object, remove it. Until the empty space is very stable. So maintain that. Then after that, once it becomes stable, to go to the next level, don't focus on the empty space anymore. Yeah, the consciousness, the awareness of the empty space, that is the base of infinite consciousness. So now, remove the empty space. Leave behind the base of infinite consciousness. Just that awareness. You notice how abstract it becomes? Yeah. And it's building on top of each other. Yeah. So second level, formless concentration, base of infinite consciousness, remove the empty space. Left consciousness. Yes. Okay, then hold that thought first. Let me wrap up this part first. Yeah, because otherwise we'll stay until 5 o'clock. So hang on. So from this to the next one, 无所有处定, base of nothingness. If we have not even mastered the mind at the earlier stage, how to even be aware of our consciousness? Not to mention consciousness of base of infinite consciousness. Now, this person, remove even this awareness of this consciousness. At this point, base of nothingness. So sometimes some students attend a few classes and, hey, Sifu, can I ask you something? When I sit, nothing in my mind. Is it correct? Quite normal. Don't laugh. Quite normal. A lot of people sometimes feel this way. Then sometimes after that, they go and search. Wow, am I at this stage? Usually no lah. Usually lah. But hard to say, who knows? Maybe the person, you don't go there accidentally. Cannot go there. And say, hey, Sifu, I made a left turn instead of right. Then I go to the base of nothingness. No. Yeah. Usually is that our mind is not sharp enough to know the thoughts. So that's why it feels like there's nothing inside. Actually, a lot of things inside. Yeah. But in this case, the person has gradually really removed all thoughts until left with this thought, there's nothing there. So the base of nothingness in the lineage I was trained in doesn't mean that there's nothing, no. It's just that it's so subtle because the only thought left is, there's nothing. There's still that awareness that there's nothing. Yeah. So this is still a thought, a perception. Perception of the nothing. Can you see how it's one pointing here, pointing. Next level, fei xiang. So then this requires us to go through in detail to explain what is xiang, what is fei xiang, what is perception, what is non-perception. Cannot go into detail, otherwise we really have no time. Cannot finish. So that level is removing even this perception, the last perception there. And because by this point, all the remaining perception has been transcended, and one of the world, which is the non-perception world, is not included. So this fourth level is base of neither perception nor non-perception. So there's a whole range. Basically, all these realms have perception. But inside the fourth jhana, there's one realm, one state that has no perception. So this fourth level formless concentration is neither the one with perception nor the one without perception. This is what it means by fei xiang, fei fei xiang, tian. Yes.
Somehow you cannot conceptualize.
So now can slightly better? Okay. Yeah. But conceptualize and doing it is also quite a distance. So why is it that all this is described as san jie wu an? Why wu an? No, what, Sifu? That's an what? At night, after work, I go back home. My whole home is quite safe. I put 3 padlocks. The fact that you have to put 3 padlocks, it means it's not safe. But here the wu an, here wu an, it's not about some robbers coming in, not just about that. It is about how there's no realm, there's no state in this samsara, in this 3 different world, that you can stay there perpetually. That you can stay there and say, okay, I'm done. Yeah. Marco, I'll be here. Yeah. When you're free, you come and look for me. I will always be here. Yeah. No. We are always somewhere temporarily only. You know, when I move from places to places, students sometimes they will come and ask me, Shifu, so this time, are you here permanently? So I always tell them, I'm here temporarily, permanently, or permanently, temporarily. Yeah. For that matter, I mean, we can also say that, Shifu, now you have no place, that's why you say this. Next time you got a place, then you're going to say it's permanent. Yeah, but the monastic life is meant to be like that, you know. Buddha himself don't have a fixed place. He go around. Yeah, that's the purpose. That's part of the point. Yeah, not like you all have a house. Yeah, always can go back there. But I'm here to break your bubble. That is also impermanent. That's why you have to buy insurance. And even after you buy insurance, it's still impermanent. I'm not talking about HDB 99 years after that zero value. I'm talking about even if it's freehold, it's not permanent. Yeah. So, human realm, more ideal for cultivation, but it's not a place that you can stay perpetually. It's not a state that give you that true calmness and stability where no more trouble will come. Is there a realm that you can say, I go there, huh? After that, I go there, no more problem, you know. Is there? No. In a human realm, we have all the different problems that bug us. You're hungry, I go and eat, Sifu. After eating, then no more problem. Really? Really? You eat? Have you had your lunch? I hope so. Haven't? You poor thing. Are you hungry? Hungry? You wait long. No. Out of compassion, we'll finish soon, okay? Yeah. We'll finish soon. For the sake of Dharma, worth it. Finishing. So, but you think about it, whether you have lunch already or not, after you have lunch, are you going to be full forever? But the funny thing is that actually not being full or being hungry is not good, you know. But you ask people, if I give you a pill and you'll never be hungry again, this is an essay topic, you know, in secondary school. Yeah, we had this essay topic. And it's very interesting, when you really sit down and think about it, not everybody want it. Because they want that desire to eat, no? So we have fallen in love with the problem itself. The problem of hunger, we have fallen in love with the problem. This, in modern world, is called the Stockholm mentality, the Stockholm syndrome. We have fallen in love with our prison. But the Buddha says, in reality, just now Marco said perception. Yeah, we perceive this world, not bad lah, quite good lah. For the three lower realms, we say, this one, not good lah. This one not good lah. This one not good lah. This one not bad lah. Singapore also good lah. Heavenly realm, wow, 9 million eh. 36 lah. Wow, this one don't know how to count already. Yeah, but the actual truth is, when the Buddha go through all this, then the Buddha highlight certain theme. What's that state and so on. Number two, the origin. He don't just jump straight to impermanent, don't go there. He tell you clearly, what is good there, what is not good there, you decide. Yeah. Then he tell you how to go there, the origin. Yeah. So if you want to go to hell, he tell you how to go to hell also. Not that anybody want to go to hell, except Tizang Pusa, he don't mind going to hell. All the Bodhisattvas, they're okay. That's the difference between Bodhisattvas and us. We think that there's some place that is nice. We think that, this place not bad, that place not so good. So we want to go to this place, we want to go to that place. Bodhisattvas see clearly that no place that is safe. So it's not out of their own desire that they want to come to this world. But out of compassion. You think firefighters like to go to a house on fire? You think they're crazy? No, it's because they want to save somebody, that's why they go there. Isn't it? So in the same way, Bodhisattvas, enlightened ones, they go to the different realms, not for... yeah, it's okay. Yeah. So, but for us, we don't see that san jie wu an. And the Buddha described, in what way? It's like a burnt house on fire. This zai is like a house, a mansion. I must spend some time writing on this thing. So this zai is basically a residence, a house. So this tree world has been our residence since beginningless time. Although we stay inside, but does it give us safety? Our house supposed to give us safety, but these three houses don't give us safety. It's like on fire, it's burning. It's burning. Burning with what? Burning with greed. Burning with hatred. Burning with delusion. Burning with tan, chen, chi, man, conceit, yi, doubt, er, jian, wrong views, evil views. Burning with all this, burning with birth, aging, sickness, and death, burning with separation from loved ones, contact with unpleasant ones, separation from loved ones, burning with not getting what we want, burning with the five clinging aggregates. So the Buddha described this world to be thus. But what does our perception tell us? Actually, I didn't expect to spend so much time today. To know what happened in between. So today I actually wanted to do a very simple exercise. Maybe we have to find another time 2 weeks later. But it's basically to do a chart. Like, if you ask yourself, let's say we put down these are the default states, defilements. Okay? Then this is the cultivation. Then this is happiness, happy. Then this is sad. Then we ask ourselves, how happy are we? How sad are we? How much cultivation thought do we have? How much defilement thoughts do we have? You may wonder, Sifu, how come you have defilements? You can also be happy. Can. Many times when we are pursuing our defilements, we are very happy, But sometimes, after that, the defilements bring us sadness. When we cultivate, we are not always happy, Leg pain, happy or not? Not happy. So sometimes when we're cultivating, we're not happy. But that kind of sadness can bring us happiness. So you can ask yourself, okay, let's say we start from zero. Then you ask yourself, okay, in a way, the up and down is what you do. Then the left and right is the result. The result of whether you're happy or sad. So you can ask yourself, okay, maybe today you come for SVC, 10 points, okay. So you take another color, then you draw, okay, 10 points. But then, initially you come, then you spend 10 points, right? Then you get happy, very happy. But then, because Sifu go on and on, then you become sad. So the arrow is like that. Then Sifu, after that, still draw this chart, then you feel like, what is this, man? Then you start to feel like, I don't want to come again. Then you go down. Then after that, you ding. Aiya, shouldn't be like that lah. Then you feel like, aiya, I shouldn't be so, Then you, back to square one. So if every day you just ask yourself, if let's say you give it a certain number, then you move how many steps up, down, left, right. Then after a week, you can see yourself moving around. Then what happened? You may ask. Then you can ask yourself, do you spend more time in the upper quadrant or in the lower quadrant? Do you spend more time in the left quadrant or the right quadrant? Yeah. If you spend more time on the upper quadrant, that means your effort is good. Yeah. If you spend more time in the bottom half, that means you are slacking. Yeah. Then if you are on the upper right quadrant, that means you are having progress and you are enjoying the fruits of your cultivation. If you are on the top left, then you must put in more, you must have more faith. Because in the top left, cultivation but no results, so you feel very sad. Then you may become disheartened, you may start to have doubts. So you must associate more with people who are cultivating, they will encourage you on. If you are in the bottom right, this is the most dangerous. This is the danger zone. Why? Because while you're in your defilements, you are very happy. This part easy to get stuck. Yeah. Once you come here, this is La La Land. Yeah. This is actually hell. If you come in this angle, you must be very careful. Yeah, because this will bring you to the lower realms. Yeah. And because this will draw you and you can get stuck there. If you are in this quadrant, not so bad. Because you're having defilements, but you start to suffer already. And this will cause you to go away from it. Yeah, because you are suffering here. Many times, the problem with defilements is, defilements don't immediately make us suffer. No. Many times, our defilements at the onset give us pleasure, satisfaction. Oh, I tell you, Sifu,